This is the Land and Legacy Podcast, brought to you by Whitetail Properties Real Estate. We're your hosts, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye. This is your weekly resource for habitat management, wildlife management, and recreational real estate. We hope you guys enjoy the show. All right, guys. Welcome back to another Land and Legacy Podcast. We've got a good one for you, kind of a pre-hunt, but very much a hunting-focused podcast, because we're going back into, if you will, some of the archives to bring about history of deer that we've had, and then what's happening right now in the whitetails world on the Woodlands, on Elam Ridge, and other farms we got our eyes on. So it's going to be a great podcast, and I'm going to be joined by Chad Keith for this podcast, And I said Chad Keith. What I meant was Chainsaw Chad. I apologize for everyone who didn't recognize who that may have been, but it's Chainsaw Chad who will be joining me. But before we jump in, I want to give a quick shout out to an amazing app that we use on X. And this podcast topic goes right in line to why we like this app so much and how we're using it specifically during this time of the year. We are marking our camera locations. We're marking the first scrapes that appear, those community scrapes, because that's where we need to capture information that is going to be built into the history of watching deer get older from 3 to 4 to 5, and then developing strategy around how they're utilizing the farm and essentially that information, those areas that they frequent. As patterns and stuff shift, we want to be able to have record of that. And having that built into an app to be able to be shared among us is super helpful. So if you don't already have the app, make sure you do get the app, and encourage you to check out all the features with the Elite membership. And when you do, use the code LEGACY20 at checkout. You'll get 20% off the OnX code. And it'll be a fantastic feature for you, whether you're managing land, hunting, and or sharing all that with others. So check them out. All right, let's get Chainsaw Chad on here. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great.
Wonderful, wonderful. I'm excited that not only we are headed to hunt this evening, but we've got a story and stories developing that are kind of like in the making, if you will, for hopefully other deer that will be harvested later in the season. But regardless if they're harvested or not, intel, man, talk to me about what's kind of occurred weather-wise over the last couple days here, as we're rounding out the end of September and moving into October. What has it been like around here in southern Missouri?
Dry. Very, very, very dry.
Yep.
It had been warm, and we finally caught a few cooler nights. I talked to a buddy today in Hartville he's had frost the last two mornings.
No kidding.
Lives in a river bottom. He saw 33 degrees yesterday morning, 32 this morning.
Wow. I knew it was going to be really cool in the bottoms, because I got up and was out right as the sun was hitting, and it just kind of that air temp, and I'm up on a big ridge, felt like 38-39 degrees, and I was like, man, I bet you down the bottoms it's definitely cool.
He sent me a picture yesterday of the frost in his yard, and that's so
wow.
Yeah, that and it's no wonder. That's part of this podcast is the fact that the deer have been on the move, and
Yeah.
You know, the acorns are dropping like crazy right now. I'm kind of curious what this weather has done to, you know, I was up here last weekend.
Up here where we're going to hunt.
Where we're hunting. It's about an hour north of the farm. The white oak acorns were dropping like crazy. The bur oaks, it seemed to be the smaller, like, not as, it was kind of like they were shedding the defected acorns,
poor, the ones that poor didn't develop acorns.
Yeah, they were shedding those. Same with the swamp white oaks. You didn't see the sheer numbers on the ground like you are the white oaks. So I kind of wonder if they're going to start dropping now.
Mm-hmm.
But they're, like, around the farm, the white oaks, it looks like marbles on the ground.
It's ridiculous. I was just adjusting a couple cameras and adjusting a stand and almost needed a hard hat in the woods just because getting up into the tree, shaking a few limbs, it was just raining acorns, and you're walking across them. You could feel them underneath your feet. So, yeah, definitely a ton of acorns, but this cold snap, I mean, we're still getting to, you know, low 70s during the day, but the nights have been cool. And that's been very much out of the ordinary.
Really
for
cool
us.
Mornings.
Yes.
And that was what, like the last couple mornings we've talked, like there's been a lot of deer movement on camera.
Lots of emails have been coming through.
Yeah.
And I think that probably could be the same, although we're talking specifically what's happening in our region. I know this is greater than just what's happening right here. A lot of things are changing across the country when it comes to the food source shift. We kind of talked about that last week on the podcast, but similar weather patterns have also been occurring. And if they haven't happened yet for you, they will be, and you'll be experiencing this. So it'll actually be more beneficial for you because you're hearing it ahead of when it happens to you, so you can get more ready. And essentially, that's what we want to talk about during this week, is being really, really ready for what's coming when it comes to the shifting in whitetail patterns. Last week, again, we talked about the shifting transitions a lot regarding food sources and the mass crops and so on and so forth. But right now, in addition to that, or kind of like a double effect, is we're seeing deer shifting kind of those summer patterns into the fall patterns, and it's not all based on food. And a lot of that can be associated with just the history of deer and following them from year to year. And I think it's a very common thread of folks who are, let's say, specifically targeting older age class deer and or just very successful at doing that. It's not the deer that just pops up necessarily. That's the 5-6-year-old that, wow, I didn't know who it was. I was just right place, right time. There's a method to the madness, and that method starts years in advance of harvesting it. And specifically, a lot of what's happening is occurring at this window. We're getting into that window of where data collection, intel gathering of specific deer is super, super important. Adam sent us the group of, or let's say the batch of young bucks. He's like, we got to look at all these young bucks. And for those listening, you know, they're the really nice 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds that we're talking about. But that's the batch of bucks that's super important to begin watching what they're doing during this time frame and over the course of the next 45, 60 days. Because what they do now and in the years to come will be so similar.
And we're seeing that now. That's the benefits to, you know, on the woodlands. The age structure has not been the greatest.
It's in the developing stage.
We're still developing it because it's been that where they've had large home ranges. They've covered lots of ground. You lose a lot of deer in gun season when it comes to that, when you have a lot of hunting pressure around you. And we've done that.
And prior to you guys really taking ownership, it was poor quality habitat on top of that.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. It was poor quality habitat, so they roamed. As we've done more work, we're seeing home range starting to shrink, and you're able to get a few more deer to 4.5, a few more deer to 5.5. And so now we're to the point where we've got some history with some of the deer. You know, Donuts was kind of one of those, that first flash in the pan of like, whoa.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a deer we've got a history with. We know at 3.5 in October, this is what he did. And it was still in that beginning phases where we didn't realize how much you can pick up on that. Like, you knew, but we had never gotten experienced it on our own place. Now all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, at 4.5 he did this. And then once he showed up at 5.5 and blew up, that his patterns were what really keyed us in to know what deer that was. Because it was like, that deer's following the same patterns that other one has. every year in September, October. Like, he's doing the same territory movement that that other one did.
Yeah, and it's almost like to a T, which is very interesting because we do know that there are food shifts that change. There are factors and components of timber harvest. There are factors and components of cattle being on some of these properties. Yet what deer are doing and the shifts that they're making and the scrapes that they're checking, and deer aren't territorial, but the ground that, let's say, the core area that is developed during these months, September, October, November, early December, it is very much, it almost seems like a ritual type deal during this time frame. They shift into this mindset because of what's happening, physiology, like the physiology of the deer, but what they're doing, their behavior is like captured in X acres, this core area. And it is, you can almost set a watch to it as he's going to show up on this scrape in this 5-day stretch. Boom.
Yeah. It's what, like this morning. I mean, this was what, one of the biggest things that spurred on the whole podcast. Our number one top priority deer, like the top deer we're after. We know he's 5.5. We've got tons of pictures of this deer. We knew him at 3.5. We knew him at 4.5. Like 3.5 and 4.5, we knew him really well because he was a really good looking 3.5.
Yeah, he stood out among the crowd.
So we automatically keyed in on him. And then even last year, it was one of those as 4.5. We borderline almost wanted to go after him. He looked so good.
Yep.
But we wanted, like, let's see. Let's see what happens at 5.5. So we have a lot of history with this deer.
You have 2 years, essentially, to be able to build a strategy around this season.
Yeah. And not sure that we don't have the 2.5 either. But the thing is, like, that's what this year, it was one of those that, like, in the last two years, he might have been on the farm, on the family farm a little more. He might have been on the place a little more through the summer and stuff, but it wasn't the same. He was still there enough to let us know he was around.
Yep.
But he spent a lot of time on the neighbor. And it was to the point, though, we had such a history with him that in years past, we might have been panicked. Like, oh, no, what's that deer going to do? Did we mess up? He's shifting somewhere else. This year, it was kind of one of those, like, yep, he sheds velvet. They start scraping. He's going to shift. He spent the last two falls in the heart of the farm. He's going to shift. And we had him enough on different scrapes that we knew, like, okay, like, I mean, I think Adam and I put that camera out 3 weeks ago on the scrape we got him on this morning, purely because he spent a lot of time in the daylight on that scrape.
He will shift here.
And we're
he'll
be here at some point. Let's go ahead and put the camera in there and see what happens.
I mean, he could have easily been 1,200 yards 3 weeks ago from even the scrape, if not more. Like
a long ways,
multiple ridges, big valley system, like a long ways away from it. But that's the most important thing right there is you knew what was going to happen preemptively. So the point of the podcast is to say, guys, prepare, start, like, take into account what's happening. First and foremost, to be able to do that, your camera's got to be on scrapes this time of the year, period, bar none.
So put them on there. We've had this camera out for probably 3 weeks. The biggest buck we've had on it until today, there may have been a little dink a couple days ago, was a spike.
Yeah, sounds probably about
right.
So,
like, in the history of when we used to run regular cameras and check them every 2 weeks, we probably would have went down there, checked that camera, and been like, nothing on it, let's move it. But we went ahead. I will say this,
and it's because of habitat. The farm's completely changed and stuff like that. Adam was infamous before the cuttingback system for moving cameras all the time. You guys would talk about, like, well, where's that camera now? You didn't move that? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
All the time.
We shifted cameras a lot. And part of it was because we didn't have the sheer number of cameras we're running now.
Yeah.
We've got the ability to just let them sit, let them soak, see what happens.
Well, and you're trying to chase deer because they were moving so much, right? There's a reason for it, but like this, they were moved all the time.
And this spot is one that it has come about, essentially in the lifespan of this deer, because it's one that, you know, historically when we hunted this place, we would walk in.
Yes.
And we would walk through this spot. We never hunted it. We would walk through this area, and there's always been, like, especially once there's been more deer, there's a big major trail that goes through there. And you jump deer there occasionally, but it's like, we got to get a camera on that. We've got to get a camera on that. And we've talked about it, and finally we put one there and realized there's a lot of deer traffic through there in the daylight. They move through there a lot. There's just a lot of different deer. And so we've put regular cameras on. There ended up being a scrape down there.
And most importantly, too, you also quit accessing through there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another big key factor. But then we put a video camera down there. And this deer at 3.5, we got great video that you guys actually posted of him snort wheezing at the scrape to another buck. I mean, it was a great one. And then that time he was just completely, his rack was busted to nothing.
But he was shredded.
But it was one, he was daylight a lot down there. And that was what, last year we just ran another regular camera down there. And this year we're like, all right, let's get a cuddy in there. Let's set it up. Let's get one down there and we'll just leave it and let it soak. Because we knew that deer's 5.5, as regular as he was on there, we need something there. And it was kind of one, what was it, a week ago when he showed up on another part of the farm finally.
Yep.
It's like, whoop, he's moving. It won't be long.
It was like that intermediate type shift. Yep. It was like, wow, that's not summer home range. Let's say this, it was a more eastern portion of what he typically did in the last 2 years during the fall time frame. Mm-hmm. So I was like, ooh, did he shift completely?
We would pick him up in there a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But it wasn't, it's not as common as that was his, like, he would occasionally drift over there, but he stayed in a certain area. And that's what it was like, okay, he's moving, won't be long. And, because, you know, we were kind of worried with, you still don't know. I mean, there's no given. And with the white oak acorn crop that we have this year, the area that he was staying in has a lot of white oaks.
Right.
And it was kind of like, well, I figure he's just over there in the open timber eating acorns. Hopefully he shifts sooner or later. Hopefully it doesn't delay it or something. You just don't know. And that was what, we got that picture. And it's like, all right, here he goes. He's moving. We're going to start seeing him other places.
Yep.
And sure enough, this morning, pops up. Bam, he's on that scrape. I'm like, yep. In the daylight in the morning.
Daylight and in an area that's like, I knew he was going to do this. And I want to stress to people listening, again, you have to begin to document this stuff and don't just put it in the memory bank, whether it's write it down, use the OnX app, something to be able to remember and know these scrapes and monitor them. And that's why the cell camera information is so valuable, is because you don't have to go into these areas that you don't hardly ever go into now, right?
Like, and that's
so difficult to access and pull cameras weekly there.
It's, we've hunted this place for a long time, but you think last year, what was going on right now on that place?
Logging.
We had loggers everywhere. I was walking through the timber marking leaf trees.
Yep.
So, like, there was a ton of intrusion going on that farm. And he still shifted to that pattern again.
Yep.
And it's one that, with our history of the place, the terrain, you know, like scouting, you look at the terrain. Terrain isn't changing.
Nope.
God's not sending glaciers through there to move the hills around and shift everything. The saddles that are there, that were there 30 years ago, are going to be there right now.
And that was foundational in the design of what you guys are doing from a timber harvest standpoint. It was, here's the prominent topography features, the things that, again, are permanent, fixed to the property. Let's design around them, because anybody knows who hunts the terrain that is, you know, semi-steep, semi-aggressive, that's going to be a huge dictating factor when it comes to what deer do, how they walk from A to B, and then from C to D, and so on and so forth. So you build it around it, and it's not changing. Yeah, it hasn't changed.
The terrain's the same. What has changed is the habitat that we've done. Now, in our habitat management, we've done the logging. We've done all that stuff. We've set up, you know, the bedding thickets aren't as effective right now because we have so much fresh stuff on the ground. They're essentially, it's a little more spread out.
Yep.
But the movement is essentially pretty similar.
But the on top of that, the bedding locations were selected because their points or their slopes or their benches that a deer commonly still will utilize because they've done it in the past, but also they're great vantage points and wind thermals and a lot of turbulence in the air. So whether the cover factor is the thing that's holding them or it's the topography and they've done it time and time again, they're still utilizing them.
Those bedding areas were picked because they were kind of choice anyway.
Yes.
When we really, 10 years from now, they will be
dynamo.
That much more enticing to bed in. That's the plan.
Correct.
But, like, there are tons of white oak acorns. We know that. You can drive down the roads and tell. It's like, okay, there's not going to be some select tree in there that's dropping acorns that they're all over. You know that.
Yep.
So it's like, we've hunted this place for 20 years. We're not barreling off in the middle of the woods looking for some white oak and scouting. What are we going to learn?
Yep.
Nothing.
Exactly.
All we're going to do is screw stuff up.
Right.
It's like if you've been at a place 20 years and you're having to go in, did you really learn anything over the past 20 years?
Nope. Nope. And the best thing to do, though, in this moment is to do the step back and say, what commonly happens every single year? And then go even more specific and start documenting that with your good 2.5-year-olds, your 3-year-olds, and your 4-year-olds. Because if you don't capture that information this season, you're next season a year behind. Like you could be, you could know what's going to happen, be preemptive, know where to put those cameras at well in advance, like you guys had done, knowing that this is going to happen and we're going to be ready for it.
You're
super
continually
valuable.
You're in a process of continually chasing your tail, essentially.
You're following every
year. You're just like, oh, we're going to do this. Oh, we're going to do this. Oh, we need to go in and look for white oak acorns. Oh, we need to go in and look for this. Oh, we need to do this. We're going to barrel into here. Well, we just intruded on everything. We've spooked them. We've put pressure on those deer there. It's like with this, with our strategy, it's like we're putting very little pressure. The deer movement is all natural. It's just they move around. We go the roads checking cameras. We have the cutties, and most of them are on solar, so we don't have to go in and check cameras all the time. We have it set up like this for a reason, and then we essentially watch the cameras. Okay, they're moving here and here and here. You look at OnX. We look at the saddles. We look at the movement corridors, the pinch points, where we've hunted in the past. And it's like, okay, if this deer is here and here and here, he's going to pass through this location, through this pinch point. We've got the wind right for that.
It's
good
time.
When the wind's good, let's strike.
Yep. And that's where I want everybody to be able to get to in their strategy. It starts with placing cameras, but it starts with documenting that historical type of information that will exist from year to year with individual deer. Seth's talked about it on podcasts. He mentioned it the other day and talking about how he targeted Dove Creek 10. And so this is another buck that's very much in the same boat. This morning I woke up, had images of a buck from last year. Hadn't seen all summer, doesn't summer on this property. And I say this property, it's 35 acres, right? Like, it's not like it's a humongous parcel or anything, but guess what? Even on small parcels, you guys are what? How big is Woodlands right now?
There's, it's like seven.
Okay, 700 acres, right? Okay. So this strategy and what we're talking about applies on a 700 acre property and a 36 acre property. Okay. So what deer are doing, what they're selecting, and what they're shifting to is going to be very similar to that degree every single year. And so this deer that showed up last year, neighbors have got them. They've got a little bit more history just because moved into the place last year. But they think that he could be 5.5. Regardless of age, it doesn't really matter because what he did last year, he's doing again already, and cameras were set. Weeks in advance, mock scrapes made. I don't summer a ton of deer. I think I've said that on the podcast several times. And so I had very little activity, kind of like those cameras. And then all of a sudden, last night, two deer that I hadn't seen all summer long, bump, here they are on camera. And so the shift is definitely happening. But instead of being reactive, you're proactive in the camera strategy and the data collection that basically builds your hunting strategy. And then when you have that information, you have a hunt strategy, you also factor this into a habitat management strategy as well, right? So, like, what's something that you guys did last year, or what's over the off season, let's say, what's something that you guys may have done differently knowing, hey, this is the Big Ten's core area, he's going to shift in here, like a management strategy. What'd you guys do on the ground to be proactive on that?
We really haven't done just a ton. I mean, there's a new plot in there.
Yep.
I don't know that he goes that far. We really haven't run cameras in that spot.
Mm-hmm.
It's near where he's at.
Yep.
The logging is the biggest thing. We expect it to hold him a little more. Honestly, that's a lot of what it is.
Yeah.
Really, it's just the logging. That's
for
essentially
sure.
the biggest thing in there. The new plot. It's one that, like, with hunting, you see so much emphasis on food plots. I'm sure a lot of people would get pictures of him and be like, oh, but he's going up there, that food plot. I'm going to go hunt that food plot. It's like, we're going to stay out.
And you may not, although your food plots look great, there's a very good chance that deer doesn't get killed in a food plot.
No.
You know?
You know, honestly, you look at the past and the history. We really, besides like the one in the bottom where we had donuts, as far as hunting mature deer, most of our strategy is in the travel corridors.
Topo features between
areas,
bedding.
Using the thermals, using the terrain to our advantage and cutting deer off. We kill the does in the plots, kill the bucks traveling in between the bedding thickets and everything else.
Late October, early November when they're on their feet and you could put a little bit more pressure on them. And it's not a chaotic deal. It's here's the topography. This is going to control the base of how they're moving throughout it. Plus, we add in these bedding thickets. They're going to be doing X routinely, day in and day out during the rut, and it makes for a much easier hunt approach and strategy.
You have more daytime movement in those areas,
For sure.
I mean, with the habitat and the way we hunt, we see probably more daylight use in the plots than a lot of people would, but it's still a mature deer.
Yes.
They're not going to go out in the open that often anyway.
Yep.
But if you get them in the cover in the travel corridors where they feel safe, you're getting deer that are moving 2 hours, hour and a half before dark.
Right.
Stuff like
right.
that in certain areas. I mean, you're getting early movement and you're getting that slow movement. Like when Adam killed at Sticker 8 on the farm, that's the classic type yep. area that we're talking about hunting, where that deer was up early.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that was an early afternoon on a hot day in, like, the third week of October.
And a time when most people consider all their deer nocturnal.
Yeah. We'll get into the October lull in another podcast, but totally. So for me, I guess what I took – from last year's information, thinking, okay, if this deer makes it through, then here's kind of what I want to be set up as. Last year in the summer, I had done some cutting as like an intense, big bedding unit, expanded that during the winter time frame, continued cutting outside of that bigger unit, just did quite a bit more TSI on the farm, trying to have as much packed in cover to make him feel as comfortable, make him select it that much more. Because even last year felt like he was not, even though he was frequent through the rut and everything, didn't feel like he was betting on the property. So it's like, I want it to be way more comfort cover and a way better betting cover. So hold the does, then going into this year, he'll have more cover as well.
Well, and I think that ties into the difference in a newer property that you own and something that you've hunted for a long time.
Oh, for sure.
Because that's where yours is new. You've got the bedding thickets you're needing to cut. You've got all that.
Yep.
In the last 5 years, we've done quite a bit of that stuff already on the farm, so it's not so much having to jump in and do these. We had the loggers do some clear cuts.
Yep.
That are bedding areas, but we didn't have to go in and do major stuff on our place because a lot of that was already in place with his movement. A lot of our stuff, it's not like we're having to be proactive and like, oh, we need to cut this in. We need to cut this in. We need to do this. We need to do that. A lot of these places, well, and like Adam and I were discussing today for just a short time, like strategies on him. We've already got stands up in some of these places.
Oh, yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
We've got that stand there. That one might work. We might put a camera in that area. But for me, I think part of the stuff, this deer's 5.5 years old. He's obviously pretty good at surviving. The last thing we want to do is barrel off into there, walking all over that area.
Trompsing. I like that term.
Let's go with dilly-dallying, because it's essentially what we'd be doing. Dilly-dallying around, looking for sign, looking for stuff, putting scent everywhere, possibly jumping him up to try to find somewhere to set up on him.
Here's the value of knowing what he's going to do. If the cameras are already set, they're going to tell you what he's doing, and because you already know it. Like, again, the strategy is being built years in advance of the season that you actually target him on. Like, he's 5.5, he's on the hit list, but you could have gone in and hunted him last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and harvest him, because he's doing or will do what he did last year too.
If it's anything that we do, it's that getting the wind right, slip in, put as little intrusion as possible, and like pop another camera in some of those areas. There's a couple little spots that I talked to Adam and I talked to you about.
Try connect a dot or two.
Yeah. It's like, we need to get that camera up again. We need to get this camera up again. We had him sometimes on a scrape over here. Let's put a camera. We need to get that camera going again. We've been busy. Adam and I both elk hunting, stuff like that. We haven't had time to get some
jobs.
Of those.
As
yeah,
well.
It's like we don't have time to go around and have cameras put out. So it's like, okay, we need to get one in there. That's essentially most of what we might do from here on out. Is just like, we need to put a cutty in there on that spot. We had one there last year on that bench where there's a trail and there were a couple scrapes. He crossed through there a lot. Let's get one in there. I mean, that's a lot of what we're going to do. And then
wait for that really good pattern to develop and then be watching the weather ahead of time and say, that's the right wind. Those are the right conditions. We're going to go there and do it. But that may not be till, you know, although he's doing what thought you could, you know, he should be doing this year, that still might be 3-4 weeks out. Like, you just, it all just got to see what happens on
right now, watching the weather, it looks like it.
True.
There's
yeah.
no weather change. That's what,
no, stagnant.
I mean, you know, that's one of those that, I mean, we just got cold, but you're really watching for fronts. You're watching for those fronts that really get deer on their feet, really moving. That's what, I don't even know how many different 2.5 and 3.5 year old bucks we had on camera this morning working mm-hmm. scrapes. Fighting, working scrapes. It was like, whoa, they're feeling it this morning.
Yep, feeling their oats. No doubt.
That was just kind of a little minor change in temperature.
Mm-hmm.
If we get into October and we have that first major cold front,
yep,
you know we're all going to be functioning at the bit to get in there and go after that deer.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And that's, yeah, like, so likewise on the one that showed up at my place is, he's going to probably continue to do what he was doing, be a frequent customer. Oh, the only other thing they changed, let's say besides adding cover, which I think is the foundational side of things, if like you got to have that for this time of the year, I did like increase the amount of food that was produced. We got good rains in August, committed to a lot of groceries. So there is Milo heads. There is a lot of alfalfa, a lot of wheat, and then lots and lots of brassicas and turnips, about four and a half acres of food. And so it's like, I know he saw that and smelled that last night. He's coming back.
Last year, late season, that the deer on the farm.
Yes.
Remember, we had one plot that got really great brassicas. You know, we had a really great plot there, and that deer was
I saw him there nonstop.
Yeah, you saw him there. He was in it a ton. Mm-hmm. So that is one thing that we did. Yep. We planted more. We replicated what we did in that plot on more area to try to get
in the same region,
better brassicas to hopefully have him stick around in some other spots that are better suited for going after him.
Right.
That set up better for us to chase him. So that was one thing we did do, was try to replicate some brassica stuff to maybe attract him to shift it just a little, make him from one field to the next or two fields over, stuff like that.
Yeah, which in all regard, 200-300 yard kind of shifting stuff. Which, so not big, but like that was a great food source. They hit it hard. If you move it, 100 yards, that's not a big deal.
Yeah. Which, and you know, it's funny, like we're talking about the deer shifting, you know, in the same sense, you think about Floppy.
Yep.
Floppy's another 5.5-year-old deer on our farm that it's a big mature deer. He's not going to score like the other one, but I think he's a 7-point this year.
Right.
But we know he's 5.5. At least.
As we're doing this podcast, Adam is sending us pictures of this deer from the 2021 season. So,
That's not Floppy. That's a deer.
No, not. I think that's a 10.
That's the one that was with Floppy this morning.
Yes.
So, yeah.
From
what I'm getting at is Floppy hasn't shifted yet.
Right.
You know, Floppy shifts too.
Yeah.
He hasn't shifted yet. Him and the other deer we've talked about most on this podcast summer together.
Yep.
They summered together. They both generally shift ranges. The 10 has, Floppy has not. And Floppy actually showed up with another deer we haven't had all year, all summer.
Mm-hmm.
Showed up this morning on a scrape, both of those together. And it's like, okay, Floppy hasn't shifted yet.
I think every antlered buck showed up this morning. It was one of those mornings like,
about all of them. There were some farm that weren't, or on the woodlands that didn't, some of those smaller ones, but there was a lot of them.
A lot.
A lot of the deer showed up and showed out, but which I've decided, rather than just calling him Floppy, I really like calling him Floppy Joe.
Yeah? He is kind of, he's a regular Joe.
Yeah.
He is. He's an average Joe. There's nothing like crazy great about him. It's Floppy Joe.
Yeah.
Why the Floppy?
Because he's got a broken ear that flops. And he's had that for 2 years.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Remember, I mean, I think you guys posted the video when you and I, it was the two of us in the stand on the farm, which he's close to that similar range. He walked right underneath us in the tree stand at Fiasco.
Yes.
And it was then that we first named him Floppy because he had that busted ear then.
Yep.
He had went all summer without it. And then that, all of a sudden he comes by and it's like, he's got a busted ear.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. We're going to call him Floppy.
And there you have it.
And it's been that way ever since.
Well, I hope this podcast has stressed the importance of gathering that information, building strategies years in advance, tying it into habitat, tying it into a hunt strategy that's going to pay off. So don't disregard your 2- and 3-year-old deer. Get that information, begin banking it. Add folders into your phone, onto your desktop, into your trail camera software, whatever it is. Make sure you're beginning to develop this so you can go back, recall it, and build strategy and get in front of the way that these deer are going to move during this time in the next few years to come. There's a lot of value in having a plan, not only from a hunt strategy plan, but just a camera strategy plan.
Speaking of strategies, we're about to the area we've got to start looking for cows. And
yes, we do.
Plan our strategy.
Yes, we do. But guys, we appreciate you listening to the podcast, and just want to send the reminder out to everyone again. If you're interested in consulting for the 2020 the year of 2023, let us know. Send us a request. Go to the consulting tab online. Fill out that information. It'll shoot us an email. We'll get with you. The schedule is building, and we just want to be as preemptive as possible and get everyone on the schedule. So whether it's Adam, me, Kyle, Frank, or Brady, we're going to be coming to a state near you and want to be able to help you guys. And we just appreciate you guys listening, and let us know when you guys are successful in the field and harvest. We would love to be able to share that success and celebrate with you. So appreciate you listening. We'll catch you here next week.